Great to have you back with us as we get ready for Game 4 between the Giants and the Marlins. We're joined by the professor, and that is Ron Wotus, the special assistant to the Director of Player Personnel, and we know him as the professor. Whoa, how are you this morning?
Marty, I'm doing great. Good morning to you. I hope you're having a good day as well.
Well, so far, so good. Now, we'll see how the game turns out today and how things go. Well, let's talk a little River Islands before we get into some baseball. I was thinking about River Islands and being in Lathrop, and we don't talk enough about how it's sort of the gateway to the valley, to Tahoe, to the foothills and everything else, right out your front door. It's not just the lakes and the trails, but you can drive out of Lathrop, and you're in the beautiful parts of California.
No question about it. You're right. We talk about everything they have to offer there, but that's the beauty of California and its location, as you're saying, close to the Bay Area as well, which we always talk about. But there's a lot in the area if you want to venture out and do something else. So, you know, I've been through that part of the country up there in Lathrop quite a bit. It's not far from the Bay Area. Every time I go to Southern California, I drive through there or to Fresno, wherever you want to go. So it is a great location.
Yeah, I like it. I like the idea of, you know, I love the valley. I love the fruit and the vegetables and all that and heading down towards Fresno. And it's really right out the front door out of Lathrop. So for River Islands, check it out, riverislands.com. They're doing a great job out there. Well, yesterday's game, it was a real baseball game, in my opinion. When I say that, I mean, look, a 4-0 lead. It disappears. Two aces on the mound. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't expect that. But the end of the game had some interesting baseball moments that I want to touch upon. I thought of you yesterday. And one was there was a balk with first and second, and Tyler Rogers is on the hill. And he sort of hesitated and looked like he was going to go to second. Then he stopped and put the runners on second and third, which eventually cost the Giants the game. But what was Rogers thinking there? What did it look like to you?
Well, in that scenario, it was a possible bunt situation, first and second, nobody out. Although I didn't think, I don't think the Giants thought that he was going to be bunting. But you have to play the corners in, and you have to be ready for it. Now, this is one reason that, when I used to work for Dusty and Felipe, we never like to run pickoff plays when you're running a bunt player in a bunt situation. Sure, sometimes a runner strays too far, you can pick him off. But if you have a play on, you want the pitcher to focus on the batter and executing the play. And it just gives them another thing to think about. And I don't believe the Giants had a play on. But what happened was, first and second, Crawford broke towards second base as if there was a play on. And it looked like Raj was ready to throw the pitch home, and he started to throw it home, and then he decided to stop because he saw Crawford break, and lo and behold, you have the balk. And that was always the biggest fear, that you were going to disrupt the pitcher or do something that he wasn't ready for that would cause him the balk. And again, I don't know if there was a plan. I don't think there was, but that's what seemed to happen to Raj. He reacted to Crawford, his mind. You know, once you change your mind, you're going to go home. You start to do that, and if something else happens, it's hard to change your thought in midstream.
Good analysis, yeah, because Raj stopped in the middle and obviously looking at something. Something went through his mind. So good analysis. That's why you're the professor here. There was another part of the ninth inning that really was interesting to me, and that was Mike Yastrzemski. And now he's got Williams on third base, and Sanchez gets the 1-2 pitch, and he muscles it up to center field. And it's plenty deep enough to score the run. But Yastrzemski sort of sidesteps it to the side and puts his glove down near the ground. And, like, the ball may not be caught. And he catches it the last second thinking maybe Williams will go early. And it was a great decoy. And the Giants looked at the replay. And I guess, Williams did wait and Yastrzemski did catch the ball. But how about that decoy? That was pretty cool.
Great play by Yaz. Great attempt on a play because the ball was hit too deep for Yaz to have any chance to throw the runner out. So instead of, catching it head high and giving your best heave-ho to the plate where you have no chance, he wanted to deke the runner and leaving too soon by look like he's going to catch it above his head and then it let fall all the way down towards the ground. And as you mentioned, he actually turned his body to kind of screen the third baseman from seeing where the ball was going to be caught. and possibly Williams break too soon from third. We've always taught our third basemen, whenever it's a sack fly situation, to get in the line of sight with the runner and the outfielder. So he has to look around you to see when the ball's being caught. So if the ball's hit to left field, you would be, you know, in line between third base and left field. So that's what our third basemen do. But I've never seen an outfielder do what Yaz did there to try to get that runner to leave early and catch the ball differently than anybody ever caught the ball before. So great attempt. Williams did a good job staying there. But I think that play can catch a lot of runners.
Boy, it was great. I'd never seen it before. And an interesting ninth inning. It does cost the Giants, and they lose the game yesterday 5-4 to the Marlins. Boy, that park's a tough place to play. Well, you've had a lot of games down there, and a lot of things have happened, huh?
Well, it is tough. First of all, you're going coast to coast. You're in Miami, and, you know, sometimes you stay on the beach there, and, you know, you have a lot of family and friends. I know a lot of the Latin players are close to Miami, and a lot of families and friends come in. There could be some distractions that you always deal with, but then you get to the ballpark. There's no fans, so there's really no atmosphere to play with. And of course, the Giants, we're always used to a full house and energy with the fans, so it can be a difficult place to play. Then you put the Presidente beer in the clubhouse, which everybody loves, right? Everybody loves the Presidente, and you have a makings of a tough place to play. And the Marlins, you know, they got a real nice starting staff. They faced a couple of real tough pitchers so far in the series. So they play the Giants tough. There's no doubt about it.
Yep. A lot of going back to even Jose Fernandez and playoff games and everything else. It's been a tough place for the Giants. Well, they do run a lot. And we've talked about this well last few weeks against the Giants. The teams are running a lot. I know I brought it up last week about Rodgers, and you gave a great explanation of how he stops the running game. But you used to call the pitch outs. And I'm saying to myself, boy, when do you pitch out now? Because teams are becoming more aggressive. Do you pitch out more? How do you assess that when you would call a pitch out? Because you were the guy who did call them.
Well, Marty, I think that the game today, you very rarely see a pitch out. It's kind of gone by the wayside. Teams aren't running as much, but to your point, they're starting to run a little bit more, so maybe they'll come back. The other thing is, you would decide on pitching out. The number one reason you would pitch out, and we've done this many times, and it's happened to us. You have the third base coach's signs, right? You know the guy's running, and that's the best way to pitch out because you know the guy's going, and you can pitch out any count. It could be 1-0. You could be behind in the count and pitch out, which you never like to do. You always like to be ahead in the count, you know, or even in the count. 0-0, 1-1, 0-2, 1-2, you get a free shot at it. But other things that came into mind years ago would be guys that would hit and run or suicide squeeze. Remember when the pitchers used to bat and you'd have Tony La Russa out there and, you know, the suicide squeeze coming, you don't know what count it's going to be. You'd pitch out then just to try to catch them on a suicide squeeze. And, you know, the pitcher's hitting, so if you fall behind to the pitcher, it's not that big of a deal. But, again, I go back to the hit and runs as well. It's more about not the statistics. It's more about the game situation. And when you got a hitter up there like Mark Loretta or a Joe Panic, and you're looking across the field and they got a runner over there first that moves okay but not a base stealer, it's a 1-0 count. You know, you might think, hey, they may play hit and run because you know the manager does that. So those are a lot of times that you would think about pitching out. And, of course, watching the third base coach's signs and getting a feel if he did something different. You may not know the sign, but you may pick up on something. His cadence was a little bit different. He emphasized the leg a little bit more and a swipe. All these things entered into your knowledge and your desire on whether you should pitch out or not.
Boy, great analysis of it. Yeah, I didn't think about that on the third base coach. I was going to ask you how you pick up the sign, but you're right. There's a different cadence. Maybe you're a little more emphatic or something like that. So you had to watch that. I mean, you coached third. Didn't you have to watch that?
Well, I did because, you know, when you coach third, you got to be aware of it yourself, given signs, which, you know, Joey Amalfitano helped me and had him watch me for years, you know, in spring training to see if he could pick up a different cadence or how many signs. Sometime a guy goes to put a sign on, he usually maybe does 4 or 5 touches and he puts a sign on, he does 8 or 9. You know, he goes to more spots, and something said, wait a second, you know, or he speeds up. But those things that come into it quite a bit. So you watch the third base coach, and you know the systems that are used, so you get a better idea. Even if you don't know exactly if it's a sign, you think something could be on. And, you know, when you play 3-game series or you play in your own division, you're getting a lot of looks at that third base coach. Mm. So over time, you get a chance to decipher on what you think is hot or what you think could be the sign.
Well, interesting. Very good. The professor, Ron Wotus, on Sunday morning. We go to school with Will. Well, I watch hockey. And, you know, I'm a casual hockey fan. And when the Stanley Cup playoffs are happening, I really try to watch it a little more because these guys are just unbelievable how fast they skate and they slam each other into the boards. And, I mean, it's the most violent game I think I've ever seen. And then I thought about baseball players. Baseball player runs to first base and he pulls a hamstring. He's out for a month. The hockey players get slammed into the wall. If you're fighting for the puck on the wall, you know, you're fair game for anything. And I just was thinking baseball versus hockey and how the baseball players get injured much more than hockey players ever do.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think first off, I mean, these are a bunch of tough guys. I think, you know, when you're in the minor leagues in hockey, they don't let you come up to the NHL until you lost at least 3 teeth. You know, they're tough. I think it's a different sport, obviously. But they play about half as many games as we do in Major League Baseball. And in baseball, I think, you know, it's a stop-and-go sport. And I was just talking to my friend Tim Ireland about this, you know, about the injuries in baseball, et cetera, et cetera. And he believes, and, you know, there's probably a lot of truth to this, that we're really not in baseball shape to play the sport the way we were years ago. I mean, you just look at guys running the first base. Do they run like Pete Rose? Do they run hard like they used to years ago? You know, players used to play every single day, and you had to be in shape to do that. And I think there's something to be said for that. Also, the individual that knows how to play and keep himself healthy. You know, guys like Crawford has always been healthy. Longoria, for the most part, they're older now. They're going to have their injuries. But the one thing that stands out in baseball that doesn't happen in these other sports, when you go to play hockey, you're on the ice for a couple hours straight, and you're doing it every day. So you're in shape to play that. Or basketball, right? You're running up and down that court. But baseball, it feels like we're always trying to save our energy because we play it every single day. We don't go full speed in practice. And then when you play the game, it's a lot different. There's a lot of start and there's a lot of stopping. And I think the other big reason we have more injuries in baseball is we don't have the days off. And we try to do that by resting our players. But I think if we had more off days, complete off days for the player to rest his body, there'd probably be a lot more injuries. And, you know, that's the one thing baseball hasn't figured out. They've probably come a long way with the science and trying to figure it out. But I don't see the injuries going down in baseball, you know, as the years go by. I just don't think it's something that we can put our finger on to limit these injuries. I mean, you expect to have the hammies and, you know, the pulled muscles in baseball because the repetitive nature of it. But some of these other injuries that we're getting, it just doesn't make any sense. As you said, a hockey player's in a fight and he's banged against the boards and they go back out on the ice the next day.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, part of it, I think, is the money invested in the players, where maybe a more minor injury, you do shut the guy down because you've got
right.
The big investment in there. I think that's part of it, too. Well, I was watching something the other day about home runs and old teams, and Ted Williams was a manager of the Texas Rangers in the early 70s, and they didn't hit many home runs, you know, in those days. We were the designated hitter. And the leader for the Washington Senators or the Texas Rangers, whoever they were at that period of time, was Ted Ford. And I'm reading the story, and it said his son played Major League Baseball, and he was Darren Ford, who was the Bullet. And I thought, wow, we haven't heard from the Bullet since 2010. I thought it was nice to bring up his name.
Yes, it is. Great memories of the Bullet. I mean, you tabbed him the Bullet. I think you put that name
yes,
on him there.
And I did.
And very appropriate, too, because he changed games for us. I mean, he was a real weapon. It was like having a switch hitter, Felipe Crespo, on the bench in a big hitting moment. When we had a tie game and we needed a runner that could steal a base, the Bullet was in there, and he won us some games. So, Yeah, it's nice to hear his voice. He helped the Giants win so many games with his legs, and he played that stellar defense as well. So, yeah, good name from the past.
Yeah, I like the bullet. Yeah, I did come up with that. I think that's when we first started talking about stuff like this, about game situations, was around Darren Ford and what he could do. So that's a good one. A couple of things that I noticed this week. Oracle Park. Well, I saw a couple of balls off the bricks. It's not easy to play this park off the bricks. The Giants are coming home to take on Colorado and the Dodgers, and they've got a big homestand, a few teams coming in. And the bricks are something else, and there's so many new outfielders now. And, you know, the ball hits the archway, it just drops. But off those bricks, well, you don't know what's going to happen.
No, you're right. And I think day one in 2000, in the year 2000 it was, when we moved into that ballpark, when we did cutoffs and relays extensively, and that's the one thing Dusty and we spent a lot of time on, was hitting balls off that brick wall in right field, because you have the different angles over there, you know, a little more towards center, but you also have the archways where the ball could hit that, go straight up in the air. You just don't know which way it's going to go. It's not a flat surface to care them like the Green Monster in Fenway. So we did a lot of that, and, you know, the outfielders need to be aware of it. They do that today where they hit balls, you know, to the outfielder, but there's no rhyme or reason. So really what you need to have is the center fielder always has to come over, and one player has to be aware of it too that you really wouldn't think about, but that's the second baseman. And from day one, we used to have our second baseman go out. It's a short right field, so he doesn't have to worry about relay position, but if it's a high fly ball that you think is going to be off the wall, and you see the outfielder backing up against the wall to try to make the catch, he needs to go out in the right field because he might be the one that picks up the ball. Marty, I know you've seen this. We've seen balls back, you know, bound halfway back to the infield. We see balls bound past the center fielder. They kick left, and they go all the way around the center field. So, you know, you need your infielders aware of that too, and the second baseman plays a big role in that.
Boy, interesting. And Ichiro, of course, didn't he hit one in the All-Star game? I think he hit one off the bricks, if I'm not mistaken. But, yeah, it's an interesting part of the ballpark, and I just saw it in the last homestand. And I said, well, here comes Colorado, the Dodgers, Kansas City, and who knows? It's a very exciting part of the play. It is. We've seen a lot of rundown plays. Boy, well, on this quick pitch I watch on MLB Network, and rundown play is always trouble, and it's that first throw. It's the first throw that either is too long or to the wrong base, and it gives the runner a chance to get back. That first throw, for me, all of a sudden I'm realizing is critical.
Yeah, it is. And I was listening to KMBR driving the other day, and I heard Tom Tolbert describing the rundown. I thought he explained it perfectly. And, you know, the players know what we're supposed to do, but it's a play that doesn't come up a lot. It always depends where the runner is when you start the rundown. You know, sometimes he's in between the two fielders. Sometimes he's closer towards a particular base. It's much easier if he's closer towards a particular base opposed to be stuck in the middle. But the whole idea of the thing is you got to get the first guy to make that right first throw, like you're saying, which should only take one throw to get him, needs to get that runner running full speed. And you need to get him to turn his head and put his head down and run to that next base, because you're closing on him. So you got to get him running fast. You can't run half speed at him where he can run half speed and then change direction. Mm. And then from there, it's a timing play. And, you know, this is where it gets screwed up. The receiving player stays still, and he slightly makes a move forward. And the guy that's chasing him throws the ball when he sees the timing of it is correct, where the guy's going to catch the ball and tag him. And that's what happens, because it is a timing play. Everybody's judgment's a little off, a little different, and they don't practice it a whole lot, and the timing gets thrown off, and guys usually give up the ball way too soon, or the receiving guy didn't get a little momentum, he got the ball too soon, and now the guy changes direction and starts running back, and you can't catch him again, especially if he's a speed guy.
Mm. Yeah,
so that's where you have the fire drill going back and forth. So the key is get them running hard as you can, and make that one throw and time it perfectly so you can tag the guy out.
Yeah, we saw it in the Philly series with Herrera. getting in that rundown. We saw it there. Yeah, you see a lot of it, and it is a play. You're right. It's sort of like a fire drill. Like all of a sudden, you have to start making the play, and you have to be ready to throw that. That first throw's got to be perfect to get the guy, because he should never get out of a rundown. He should never do that.
No.
A couple of things. Friday night, we had a game. Casale, of course, the Giants score 15 runs. They're hitting home runs all over the place. And poor Kurt Casale ends up striking out five times, Will, in the game. Five times. And they put up, they flashed something about, you know, other Giants who struck out five times in the game. I guess Belt did it. And Steve Whitaker did it. And Mac Williamson did it. And you got to go back a little bit. But Casale did it five at-bats, five strikeouts. Most of those other guys had other plate appearances. But they came up with one name. And I thought you'd appreciate this story. It was Benny Kauf, and it was around 1920 or so, K-A-U-F-F. And he was a player who played in the Federal League before going to the Giants, and he was a two-time batting champion. They called him the Ty Cobb of the Federal League, which was sort of the third major league, whatever you want to call it, in the mid-1910s. And then they broke up. But he played for the Indiana Hoosiers and the Brooklyn Tip Tops. And when the league fell apart, he went to the New York Giants. So he's a good player for the Giants and is in the World Series and all that kind of stuff. And he ends up striking out five times in a game, and he puts his name in the record book. But then things happened to Benny Kauf, and they didn't explain this last night. He ended up having a couple of friends who stole a car. And they got him involved by selling the car to an innocent bystander. And it turned out the car was stolen. And he ended up going to trial on car theft, and he was acquitted.
Oh,
and then Judge Landis, who was trying to clean up baseball, this is around 1920 or 21 or so, said, well, I think this is the wrong verdict. We're going to throw him out of the game, and they threw him out of baseball forever.
No way.
Forever. Yeah. And that was Benny Kauf, the first Giant ever to strike out five times in a game. He got thrown out of baseball.
Well, that's a Patton and Marty Lurie story. The Tip Top, what was the name of that one club you mentioned?
Brooklyn the Brooklyn Tip Tops.
The Brooklyn Tip Tops. Very good. I coughed on cue for you since I've been coughing for the last few weeks here. But, you know, the thing that comes to mind, great story, but I think to Kurt Casale. And what I used to like to tell those guys when you win big and you had a guy that had, you know, made all the outs, you know, guys are going 3 for 5, everybody's joining the party, I would thank those guys. And it just shows you what kind of team player Kurt Casale is, because you know what? He said, I'm going to get this game moving along, otherwise we'll be here for 6 hours. I'm going to make the outs because I'm a team guy. And that's what he did. And that's the type of player and man Kurt Casale is. So, good for Kurt doing that on the night when we scored a lot of runs.
I like it. Five times up, five strikeouts. Everyone else in the Giant record book up more than five times in their games where they struck out five times. So interesting. And the first one to do it, Benny Kauf, who ended up being acquitted, then kicked out of baseball by Judge Landis, and he was a New York Giant. Well, we'll end it on that one. How about that? That's my story for a Sunday morning.
That is a great story. That is a wow. I mean, honest to God. I mean, I don't know where you come up with them. I think that you make them up sometimes, but we'll see if we can research that one and double-check your facts.
All right. I like it. All right. I like telling these baseball stories. It's what makes the game alive. All right. Well, have a great Sunday, and we've got the Dodgers next weekend. So we got that and this next homestand. So we have a lot to look forward to. And see if this team can get out of Miami with a split and get back home to see the Rockies on Tuesday. So have a great afternoon, and take care of yourself.
All right, Marty. Thanks. Great being with you as always.
Okay. That is the professor, Ron Wotus. More coming up right here, KMBR 680, 104.5, the sports leader.